Here's to your success in property, finance, and money management. You're listening to The Long Property Show with your hosts, Daniel Gold and Patrick Lynch.
Alrighty, welcome back to another episode of The Long Property Show. I'm Dan Gold.
And I'm Patrick Lynch.
And we just realised that Marcel doesn't have any questions.
Thank you.
You can practice in the next 30 seconds before we get into it. But Marcel, I've been meaning to ask you.
Yes.
I think we need this clarified once and for all. Okay. A lot of people listening to this, a lot of my friends and family, they struggle to understand how I got through Melbourne High School.
I think I'm probably in the same boat with my friends and my family too.
This is an academic school, and you and I both seem to get through. The story goes that I've had some friends in older year levels that kind of helped me out with the odd kind of tip here or there, mm-hmm. maybe the odd kind of old exam paper that got passed down. Is there any validity to this this myth?
Look, I think I got extremely lucky to get into the school. I think maybe the pool of talent from the school that I was coming from wasn't as good,
strong.
And I snuck in somehow. But it's definitely a great school.
Great school. So much fun, and got me on the kind of academic path. I was like, geez, to fit in here, you've got to actually like get good grades and work hard and study. So I think we've spoken about in the past, definitely did help a bit. Is that how you got into property management?
Not
like
at
everything
all.
Everything you learned at Melbourne High School?
I think I'm probably the first property manager to come out of Melbourne High School. I actually fell into it accidentally. I had a terrible experience when I was looking for a rental property.
Yeah.
I was actually looking for a place with a girlfriend at the time, and the agent that was taking me through the property like showed me a property that wasn't actually on the market with people still living in there. He had the keys on him. He didn't ask them for permission. He kind of just snuck me through this property one day, knocked on the door, no one answered, so he took me through. There was beds in the living room. It was a mess. And after walking away from that, I was like, this is terrible, like this service is terrible, the experience I'm having is terrible.
Yep.
And I started looking into it. I always had a passion for real estate. The typical Melbourne High doctor, lawyer thing wasn't my thing. So I had to look for other avenues, and I always loved people and speaking to people and dealing with people. So,
yep. So that kind of triggered the curiosity, and then what? Where did you go from there?
Look, I went to all sorts of places. I did all sorts of various roles. I did go to uni for a little bit. Didn't complete, but I kind of just needed a bit of a break from studying, and just got into some different sales types roles, and I really enjoyed it. Like my passion was dealing with people, and I also had this thing about real estate. So the two kind of came together, and I did my real estate course and went out there and started looking for a job. And I actually couldn't find one. No one wanted to hire anyone in the industry with that experience.
Oh, really? Okay.
So it took me 5 years of doing other things before I finally got a job in real estate.
Interesting. Really cool. So, so now you head up the property management kind of arm of Besser & Co.
That's right.
Is that where you started at Besser, or was there something prior?
No, so my first job was with an agency in the suburbs in Murrumbina, and they were a 40-year veteran of the area. They were a big, well-known, established brand in the area. They managed over 1,400 properties. They were the biggest player in the industry in the area, and everyone knew who the brand was. And I started off there and kind of just figured it out as I went. There wasn't a lot of training. It was a lot of, you know, throw you in the deep end and figure it out, which was probably good, because I guess now we're in a situation where our business is growing and there's a lot of figuring it out as you go as well. So it probably wasn't all bad starting off that way.
Yeah. And then so when did you connect with Dion and Besser & Co?
So I've known Dion since we're like 15.
Yep.
He started his agency at about the same time that I started in real estate.
Okay.
And we'd had a couple of little conversations in the really early days, and I just wasn't ready because I didn't really know what I was doing. And then about 5 years ago, I was in a situation where I'd probably outgrown where I was, and I had ideas and I had some things that I wanted to do and I thought would be great for the industry and great for the business. Mm-hmm. And the people who own the company just weren't on the same page.
Yep.
They were kind of the traditional real
old
estate
school.
Agent. They were old school. They'd been doing it for 40 years, and their answer to everything was, we've been doing it for 40 years. it still works. Yep. We've been doing it for 40 years, it still works. And so instead of banging my head up against a wall, which I felt like doing often, I reached out to Dion and the timing was right and I came on board.
So give us an example of some of these like innovations or things that you can do differently as a small boutique, nimble, kind of new age type brand as opposed to the old school, set in your way type.
So we're a heavily technology focused real estate agency. So we are completely paperless from the moment a tenant is approved for a property or applies for a property. We don't take paper applications. It's all done online. We send out all the paperwork to be completed digitally. So it's digital signatures on everything. It means our turnaround time on finding a tenant, leasing that property is extremely short. I can show someone through a property in the morning, have their application checked in the afternoon, and have the paperwork out to them that evening with the money in our account a day or two afterwards. Cool. So it makes our turnaround time extremely quick.
Yep.
Some other stuff we do is, you know, we've got a lot of clients, especially in the current climate, which you guys will probably know about as well, with this apartment boom. There are a lot of people who've been buying these off-the-plan apartments, settling on apartments, without ever seeing the apartments. Mm-hmm. So we've got clients who have never seen apartments and then trust us to find the tenant, look after the property, take good care of the property. So we have a lot of technology around making sure that a lot of apps that we use allow for certain reporting that you couldn't do previously or a lot of other agents aren't doing.
Yep.
So we provide our clients with really detailed reports on the condition of their property. So they can see throughout their tenancy exactly what the condition is. You know, it's not uncommon for us to take between 200 to 400 photos of a property before a tenant moves in.
Wow. Okay.
Now, if you're a landlord and you're trusting, you know, a property manager to look at a property and care for that property and look after it and make sure that it's, you know, being well taken care of, well, a lot of these landlords are relying on someone saying, "Yep, your property was great, was there this morning," and just trusting that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we want to prove to you that it is what it is.
And that, yeah, I imagine from a compliance standpoint, that would be quite helpful as well, just paper trails and documenting all this, which if electronic is going to be a lot easier.
It's all there. Mm. It's all there. So we inspect a property every 6 months. So a tenant moves in, we do a detailed report when they move in.
Yeah.
3 months after that, we'll do our first routine inspection, they're called. And that's another detailed report. And every 6 months after that, throughout their tenancy, there's someone going to that property to make sure that it's being well maintained, it's being well looked after, but also that there's no damage occurring to the property. So there's situations where, you know, the tenant might be looking after the property, but, you know, in the bedroom, in the corner, there's a big crack forming.
Mm.
Now, that might not be a serious issue when it's a hairline crack, but you leave that for a year and all of a sudden it's something substantial and probably quite costly to the landlord. So our job isn't just to make sure that a tenant keeps their place clean and pays their rent on time. I mean, we could do that in a day, making sure people's rent is on time. We're really, I suppose, more asset management as well as
people management. And what you're talking about there, that's the type of thing that could easily ruin a relationship. Like, let's say, for example, it's left too late. The obvious question that the landlord asks at the end of the day is, well, why wasn't this discussed earlier when it could have been, you know, remedied cheaper?
Definitely. Definitely. So one of the things that the reason why we do these reports and I guess why we're so thorough with them is we also give the landlords an opinion of what we think they should do. Now, some landlords don't like spending money, but as a whole, it's our job as property managers to ensure that your property is going to last the test of time. So we're not just here to manage a property for a year or for a month or for 2 years. You bought the property with the intention to one day sell it, I assume, like down the track. Eventually sell the property for a profit. So our job is to make sure that we, I suppose, caretake and manage that asset for you for the next 2, 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 years or when you pass it on to your
children. On that point, I've got a good new name for the business. Long-term property management.
Hey, there you go, maybe.
we could partner. I like it. All right, enough dad jokes. So that's good. That's a good segue into, I guess, as a key starting point, Marcel. What should our listeners consider when selecting their property manager? Like you've touched on a couple of things there around, you know, the reporting frameworks and inspections and whatnot. But are they the key things? You mentioned trust earlier. Like, how would you respond to that question in, like, you know, 3 or 4 key bullet points?
Yeah. So I think the main thing that you need to do is trust your property manager. And as hard as that is with you know, something that's probably worth, you know, $500,000, $600,000, $1 million, someone you've just met, you want to be able to establish or see yourself trusting that person in the future. They're your long-term partner in your property. They make sure that your tenant, that the right tenant's placed into your property. They make sure that the tenant's rent's paid on time. They're the ones that are out there seeing your property way more often than you are. So it's really important. I think it's the key thing that you should look out for is finding someone that you trust, and also someone who's going to be there, who's looking at property management as a career. Someone who's going to be there with you for the next couple of years.
There's a high turnover in the industry.
High turnover. The average is 3 years in the industry of people.
So how do you generate that trust for people who come to you going, I need a property manager?
Yeah, look, so for us, it's the hardest part, because there's nothing worse for us than someone looking over our back and telling us what to do. And I understand why people do it. And it's really that first year of managing their property where our goal is to prove ourselves to them and establish that trust. We do that by providing really thorough inspections, communicating well throughout the tenancy application process, communicating well when there's a maintenance issue, finding out from the client, I guess, exactly the service that they're after and performing to that. So we want to get to a stage where when I call the client and say, listen, there's a water leak, we need to send a plumber out. Instead of them going, Marcel, can you organise 3 quotes for me? I want them to be able to trust that we've got good tradespeople. I want them to be able to trust that we're looking out for their investment.
I'm just thinking we should have restart the recording of the podcast. You should have told everyone that you got into medicine, Lord, but you turned down those offers. You know, that would make you much more trustworthy.
It was either medicine or property management.
Such an easy choice to make, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, definitely. I just don't do blood.
So in terms of what you've said about generating trust and experience and credentials, all the rest, what if someone just says, well, I don't need a property manager, I can do it myself? What would you say are the big differences or big challenges in doing it yourself rather than using someone like yourself, Besser & Co, who have got the experience?
I actually think that the a good property manager adds value to you. So they add financial value and they add, I guess, your time value, right? So in terms of finding a tenant for your place, if you look at real estate, go to realestate.com.au now, search for any suburb and any rental property for any suburb, and then arrange the search by the oldest listings to the newest listings. I guarantee that any suburb you search for now, the oldest listings will be a for sale by owner or one of those mobs, and the photos will be terrible and the description will be terrible and there'll be no contact details and no open for inspections. Now, if you consider that your property that's $500 a week, $600, $1,000 a week, if that property sits empty for a month, there's $2,000 gone out of your pocket. If you've got a good property manager, you might pay them, you know, $1,000 to find you a tenant and $1,000 for their management or $1,500, whatever their fees are. But if you consider the fact that they're going to lease your property quicker, they're going to make sure that your rent is actually as high as it should be, you're getting the best return on your investment as possible, it's being maintained. You don't have to worry when something happens. You know you've got a support network of people that are actually there protecting your investment. I also think that, you know, we have a lot of people who have tried it and they've managed it themselves, and we have a lot of tenants who have been in that situation as well, and they've just hated it because whenever they've gone to call someone, no one answers the phone.
Yep.
And like it blows, like we have some properties which are just like they're sinkholes. Like there's issue after issue after issue after issue after issue. There's a plumber there or an electrician or a handyman or a tradesperson. There's all the time, and it's frustrating for everyone involved. The tenant hates it because nothing works. The owner hates it because it's costing them a fortune, and we don't really like it because all our time's tied up in organising tradespeople, but that's part of what we do.
Yeah.
If you have, I mean, is that something that you want to be doing? That's a question you've got to ask yourself. If you're managing the property by yourself.
Because I think a lot of people just naively think that, oh yeah, I collect the rent, easy, you know? if only, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, so clearly, and particularly with the you know, these case studies, there can be some on the opposite end of the spectrum. But how about, do you have any, like, stories around non-paying or late-paying tenants? Because just as bad as, you know, properties that costing a lot by way of repair and maintenance, I'm sure there are some other ugly issues on the payment side. So
look, there's how's that work? There's a whole heap of issues that we deal with. So the maintenance is just one part.
Yeah.
The rent payment is another one, but you've also got tenancy disputes, like tenants and other tenants, tenants and the landlord, tradespeople and the tenants. There's so much that we cover.
Give us a couple of stories around some of the ones that are more memorable in your career.
So it was probably quite early on. I got a phone call on a Saturday. I was out doing open for inspections, the life of a property manager. And I had a call from the office saying, Marcel, you've got to get to this building. We managed the whole building. There's about 12 apartments in it. There's a fight between two of the tenants.
A fight?
There's a fight going on.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay,
verbal,
I'll finish up.
Physical?
That's all they told me at the time. So I was finishing up my open for inspections, and then I was going to head down. I had one left, so I was about 15, 20 minutes away. About 5 minutes later, I get a phone call. Marcel, someone's pulled a knife, and there's a fist fight on the street. I'm like, all right, I'm on my way there now. And if you saw me, guy, I'm not a tough-looking person. Naively, I thought that I'd head down there and be able to fix everything, which I did. So I got to the property, and the girl from our reception had actually told me that the apartment 9 pulled a knife on apartment 3 or something like that. But it was actually the other way around. So I went up to the apartment. I went and knocked on. There was no one on the street. Everyone was in their apartments. I went up to apartment 9 or whatever it was, thinking that someone else pulled a knife on him when he was actually the person who had pulled a knife on the other guy. And this guy's
and
a bit of
he doesn't know who's knocking on the door. He could have thought that it was the guy.
He didn't know what was happening. And look, I have to, I dealt with him in the past. He was a pretty rough character. Anyway, I knocked on the door and he opened up and he was quite aggressive but also quite shocked to see me. And I was like, listen, I heard there was a bit of a dispute and someone pulled a knife on you. Are you okay? I'm just here to make sure everything's all right. And he's like looking at me going, not sure if he, obviously I didn't know the full story. So he played the victim a little bit. And I was like, who was it? And he's like, oh, it was a guy from downstairs and it's been going on for a while. So anyway, he stayed in his apartment. I went downstairs and I had a chat to the guy downstairs and he actually told me what had happened. So I ended up getting them both downstairs into the car park, making them apologize to each other and shaking hands, promising me that it would stop here and nothing else would continue.
No police involvement.
Otherwise, I'd get the police involved.
And what was the dispute? What was it about?
It was a parking space. It was an older style. Yeah. It was an older style apartment building. And the older buildings have really narrow car spaces because cars were probably a bit narrower in the 60s when these were built.
Yep.
And so it was a dispute over parking space.
How did these guys pass your tenancy
test? I didn't place these ones.
Oh, you didn't
place inherited.
Yeah,
we inherited these ones. We inherited the whole building, which was a nice get, apart from some of the tenants that were in there.
Very interesting. So, and what would be the other more common disputes that you see in your day-to-day?
Yeah, look, I think early on especially, I realised that there are a couple of key moments throughout a tenancy where people have the opportunity to get upset or get angry. And I think they were the main things that I took away from where I was working and kind of looked at how we could better that for everyone involved,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there were some situations that arose about tradespeople and the way they acted towards tenants. I had a woman call me and say that, you know, a tradie had stolen from her once.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I moved over to Besser & Co, it was really important that we established really good relationships with tradespeople and found tradespeople that we trusted, that we could rely
Same
on.
Same values.
Exactly. Yeah. So we found, we've got an army of tradespeople who have all been vetted, who we deal with regularly.
Yeah.
And it's we get approached by tradespeople all the time because obviously working for a real estate agency can be quite lucrative.
Yeah.
However, we're very strict on who we allow. You know, they're walking into our tenants' properties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're doing
off the back of your recommendation.
On our recommendation,
so
exactly.
Your reputation's on the line.
Exactly.
If they step up.
Yeah.
So, go on.
I was just going to say that it can be such a, interacting with the tradespeople can be a great experience or a terrible experience. But at the end of the day, the tenant's looking at us and going, why, you know, if something happens, they're like, why did you give that person a key to my apartment? Or why did you recommend this person? So we see our tradespeople as an extension of us. They represent our brand.
And those tradespeople are coming in because there's something that needs to be fixed, right?
Yeah.
Something that tenant has asked, okay, this isn't working.
That's right.
It needs to be fixed. So from the landlord's point of view, do you recommend landlord insurance, or what should landlords be looking for if they are looking at insurance for those kind of issues or the cracks you mentioned previously?
I think landlord insurance is a must. And I wouldn't recommend to anyone. I mean, if you drive a car, you get car insurance. If you own investment property and you've got tenants, get landlord insurance. It, you may never use it. However, that the one time in 5 years that you're going to need it, it will cover itself and you'll be so thankful that you had it.
And do you think, like, irrespective of new property versus old property, blue chip suburb versus not, like, just as a
blanket
general
rule, get it.
Yeah.
And so what should people be looking out for within the policy? Because we've got a property where the policy specifically said no pets.
Yeah, I think you've got to be really thorough. And I mean, with I don't know if you guys are familiar with the changes to the Residential Tenancies Act, which we wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can touch on that. But I mean, that policy saying no pets aren't allowed, these new changes allow pets as a blanket rule. You can't not allow someone to live in a property because they've got a pet. So I don't know how that'll go. There are some specific tenant landlord insurance providers. That's basically all they do, and they're the ones that we generally recommend because they understand, I think, the situation better and the more practical aspect of being a landlord.
Okay.
So they're the ones that I'd recommend.
So just on the legislation changes, do you want to talk to them and explain to our listeners, you know, what some of the key outcomes of them have been?
I think the biggest, there are a couple of big main points. The first one is that you can no longer discriminate against people who have pets. Most landlords, look, we've got a bunch of landlords who are super pet friendly with their properties, and there are certain benefits to having pet or allowing pets in your property. It opens up the pool of tenants wider, and also it's so hard for people with pets to find properties that you can generally secure that tenancy for a longer period of time. Now, will tenants trash a property? Will pets damage a property? Potentially. I mean, we've definitely had situations where floorboards get scratched up more than they would have. We've definitely had situations where gardens have been dug up. If the dog wasn't there, I doubt they would have been dug up.
Yeah.
There are a whole bunch of situations which you can avoid by not allowing pets in properties. Now, I don't think this specific change will have a huge impact on tenancies. I think through the checks that we do personally, I mean, we do certain things that a lot of agents probably don't do. Not only do we do the regular checks where we speak to their previous agents or we speak to their employer, but we check out their Instagram accounts, we check out their Facebook accounts.
Manually?
We look them up on LinkedIn manually. We sit there and we try and get an idea of the people we're placing. Because on paper, anyone can make themselves look good. But what they're putting on Instagram, if they're sitting there and they've got, new puppy pic, well, you know, depending on our owner's preference, that they actually may not be accepted.
In a similar vein, random, but what about babies?
Because, well, we can't discriminate against babies.
Yeah, but because they can trash a house.
Yeah.
Probably,
yeah.
You know.
Probably worse than a
worse
pet
than
pet.
A
yeah,
pet.
Yeah.
Depending on the baby.
Yeah, yeah. We had.
I'd
had
rather have a pet than a baby, and that's just personal advice.
I had an open for inspection once, and I think there was like three. There was three kids, probably under the age of five, like a three-year-old, four-year-old.
I'm
five,
thinking
and they were just
on
like,
the tire, like walls. I'm thinking. Paint everywhere.
Oh, these kids were just loving it. They were running around and screaming, and there was fingerprints on walls afterwards, and just like they were rolling around.
So how do you deal with that as a property manager? You know,
look, we advise our client of exactly who the person is that's applied for the property. This is the situation. They've got three kids. Their ages are this. Look, at the inspection, the kids were quite active. You know, we try and be polite, but we also don't want to put in the wrong people for our clients. Our job is to make sure that our clients have the best possible tenants and the best possible price for their property.
Yeah.
So if that means that we've got to not approve someone, we won't approve someone. It's not about filling houses. It's about putting the right people in houses.
Just you're into tech and new ideas and all this. Surely there's some technology startup or something that just helps with this interview process to select the right candidates. Have you come across anything like that? Or
Because
like manually checking someone's LinkedIn and Facebook, like that's time consuming. Is there something that just gives you a score?
No, there's not. And I'll tell you why, because a lot of people make up a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, we only look at Facebook and LinkedIn because that's a pretty raw indication of who someone is.
Mm.
I mean, even though they're only showing, you know, the better side of life, you can still judge for yourself whether, you know, whether they're going to be a party house or whether they're, you know, out every weekend drinking and having people over at their house and it's going to frustrate the neighbours. And like we don't just consider the apartment. We've also got to consider the apartment building, because we deal with a lot of kind of, well, we deal with a whole gamut of properties, but some of the developments that we deal with, we might have an apartment building of 30 properties, but we manage the entire building.
Yep.
So when we manage the entire building, we've got to make sure that that apartment's got a good tenant, but also that tenant is going to get along with the other people in the building. So there's going to be a feel with, like, the last thing we want is disputes between tenants.
But you're not doing those checks on every application, right? It's, you may have 10 applications, you've shortlisted down to 3 or 4.
Yeah.
It's at that stage you're kind of going...
Yeah, look, once we've got a good idea of who we want to go with based on paper, and obviously we meet everyone at the open for inspections. We don't give keys out and let tenants look at places themselves. Mm-hmm. For us, it's probably the key part of finding a tenant is us meeting them first, because as everyone can, you can get a good idea of somebody the first when you meet them.
Yep.
And that first opinion goes a long way.
Okay, and you mentioned speak neighbors where you might be managing those other properties in the unit block. If you're not, if it's just a standalone property, how often do you talk to neighbors when you're doing, for example, inspections after 6 months to find out what their experience has been of the tenants?
Look, unless we bump into them in the hallways, it's pretty hard to find, because
they're going to see the property day in, day out, see the tenants coming in and out, for example.
Yeah. But look, if I guess when we have issues, so if we have a situation where a tenant throws a party, which happens, there's birthdays, there's anniversaries, there's, you know, that weekend or whatever it is, from time to time people have people over and it can frustrate some other tenants, generally they'll find us and they'll just, you know, they'll Google the address and they'll see what agent was representing that property and they'll find us and contact us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe just to... kind of draw the whole chat, Marcel, to a close, and it's been extremely insightful. What would you say about just the current state of the market, the property market, like with lower values that we're now seeing, particularly in the area, the area that you operate in, not excluded, and also just like with less construction activity. You mentioned the apartment boom earlier, which is kind of slowing down. So what impact have you noticed there specifically on the rental market?
Yeah, I think we're probably in a really good position to answer that question as well. We're even though we're a real estate agency based in East St Kilda or Balaclava, we're not a Balaclava real estate agent. So last year we transacted in over 24 suburbs in Melbourne. So we can see a pretty broad part of Melbourne. So I think that there's definitely been a drop in prices. I think vendor expectations are now meeting what the market is actually doing.
Yep.
You know, we've had a quarter of auctions. We've had a quarter of auction results.
You're still talking on the sales side?
Yeah, right? Yep. Yeah, sales side. I'll talk a bit about the rental side as well. But they're kind of linked. I think the expectations on the sales side is, you know, leading into Christmas and New Year's, no one knew what was happening in the property market and what was going to happen. Now we've got, you know, 3 months of data that show prices have come back a little bit. And I think people that need to sell are now accepting the fact that this is what the market is now.
Sure.
But I think it's really important to also trust your agent, because you've chosen them for a reason. Trust them to get you the best result. On the rental side, it's really funny. On the rental side, we're getting certain properties. I think your higher end properties are still there. Like there's still a market for that. The apartment market is probably plateaued a little bit because, like you mentioned before, the boom. There's so many apartments going up everywhere that what distinguishes a two-bedroom apartment in your street to the one around the corner to the 15 others that your tenants are probably going to look at. So you're competing with a whole bunch of other apartments. Unless you have something unique, if you've got a beach view, if you've got a, you know, a park view, if you've got bigger sizes, if you've got something that's going to make yours stand out to the others,
yep.
it's just a case of meeting the market.
But the demographics, obviously, for Melbourne, I think they're saying by 2026, Melbourne's going to be the largest urban area in Australia. A lot of people still moving in, but construction has definitely slowed. Yep. Are you seeing rentals increasing, the rental price being achieved being higher?
Yeah, so I saw that article. It was about 350 new people coming into Melbourne every day.
Yeah.
Crazy numbers.
Not a lot of properties.
There's not,
no.
So, look, we review our rents on our existing properties annually. So every year we do a really detailed look into the area that the property's in, the style of property, how it's performing against the average in the marketplace.
Meaning that you look at the current rent in comparison to recently rented
comparable properties. Comparable properties. So we present our clients with a report. And I think that most of the time at the moment, and it really depends, because you see this blanket that the market's falling, right? Yeah. But if you look at, you know, your luxury, you know, there was a $30 million penthouse apartment that sold in St Kilda a couple of months ago, off the plan. Is that the sign of a falling market? Probably not. So I think certain unique products, there's still market for it. And it's the same in the rental market. If you've got a standard apartment in a standard area, the rents are probably going to be quite standard. If you've got something unique, you've got a bigger apartment, we actually are increasing prices on some of the properties that we manage.
And any comments just on the level of activity to open for inspections and whatnot?
We had 42 people through a property last weekend.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what was so unique? That's uncommon. So what was so unique about that?
It was at the time that it was a two-bedroom apartment in South Yarra. It wasn't in a high rise, it was in a low rise.
Okay.
It wasn't brand new, it was an older renovated block. And there just, I think at that particular moment, there just wasn't a lot of stock out there like it. So it's a supply demand thing. If you've got a unique product, then people are going to flock to it.
And maybe just a final question. You mentioned about party houses and all the rest. Do you manage any properties under Airbnb conditions?
Yeah, so we've got a company that we work with, and they do that. So they're an Airbnb premium host or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And we have, so they'll reach out to us when they see a property that's suitable for them. We'll then reach out to our clients and ask them if they'd be happy to entertain that idea. We've worked with these, I think we've only leased maybe 3 or 4 properties to them. And we haven't had any complaints. They're a really good operator.
Yep.
They're setting their properties up for families. So they put in like cots and single beds and a main bedroom and a main bed. So the way that they approached us and went about it was quite comforting to us, because it wasn't set up to be a party house.
Yep.
They don't do like self check-ins or anything like that. We vetted them pretty thoroughly, because I was quite opposed to the Airbnb thing initially. We tried them out with one property, and the response was great from our end and theirs. I think it was a year before they got the second place with us.
Okay.
However, on the flip side of that, we've had situations where we've got a property that we rent out that's next door to an Airbnb property, and we have constant issues.
Yep.
So I'm getting phone calls at 11:30, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning from the tenant saying they're partying again.
And are any of the legislative changes coming in, are they anything reflective of Airbnb?
Look, I think they're trying, but they can't really govern what someone does inside their property. You know, what you choose to do inside your property is what you choose to do inside your property. I know some owners' corporations have tried to make the facilities of the building only accessible for landlords or long-term tenants over like a 3-month or 6-month period.
Okay.
There was another piece of legislation which I'm not sure where they're at with it, but they were actually looking at holding the landlord responsible and liable for any damage to communal areas if the property was being leased out on Airbnb, and also if there's any noise complaints or the police come out or anything like that, any fines associated directly go to the landlord.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Marcel, appreciate your time, mate. Super helpful.
Love it. Thank you, guys.
Just to wrap up, couple of key points just in summary. I think trusting your property manager, finding someone that's trustworthy, finding somebody that is going to just be very diligent with their reporting and feedback and advice.
Yep.
Ultimately to find you the right price and to find you the right tenant. Any final messages from your end?
I think it ties in really well with what you guys do as well. I mean, if you're looking for a mortgage broker, it's about quality. It's about someone you trust because it's such a big decision. Properties are not something people just wake up and go, I'm going to buy a property. They spend a lot of time thinking. They spend a lot of time researching. And even things as small as, what structure to have the house in or to get the loan in.
Yeah.
I mean, it can make such a big difference when you purchase initially as well as when you sell the property. So it's just worth, I think the key thing, if you're into property and you're looking to invest in property long-term, get your team around you.
Yeah.
Find a good broker, find a good property manager, find a good accountant, get all your people in line to make sure that journey's as simple for you as possible.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. Thanks again for your time. We'll do it again soon.
Too easy. Thank you, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Long Property Show. If you have any questions for Dan or Paddy, you can email hi@longproperty.com.au and they'll respond within 24 hours. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and also leave us a review. This way we can continue bringing you the best weekly content possible. See you again next week. Bye for now.